There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right. Here we go. Midday Mobile, FM Talk 106.5, streaming online. Get this, fmtalk1065.com. Boom. We have the right website for the station. You can get our podcast there. You can stream there, show schedules, all kind of extra goodies on board, fmtalk1065.com. So check that out. And so you open it up on your phone. You want to stream us there, fmtalk1065.com. All right, lots to do on today's show. I want to start off a list of things, just kind of... an inundation of stories as we get started with the program. But I got to, and we're going to do some program information. Cameron Smith is going to join us here shortly. We'll do some programming information, how you can win fabulous prizes from FM Talk 106.5. I'll tell you about that in a second. But maybe my friend Leanna can help with this. Leanna, it's February. We're not in sweeps, are we? Do they still do sweeps? I mean, you know, you got the most TV chops of anybody around here. I mean, is it sweeps? Here, I'll get you closer to that. Yeah, there you go.
Here we go.
There we go.
I think so.
There's February sweeps? I always thought
May
was always one where you have the stories, y'all. If y'all have heard this, it'd be like, could alligators be hiding in your children's school? We'll give you details tonight at 5.
Right.
That's that you would hear those stories, you know, shock stories.
Exactly, yes.
For sweeps.
That May and November are the biggest.
But you think there is something? Because I see, there's a headline pops up here from our news partners at WKRG. News 5 investigates female sex offenders. Now, and this is mostly about, like, the teachers, you know, the teachers with the student thing, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's some prurient nature here to this getting clicks.
Yeah, I think...
I mean, I clicked it.
I think February is a sweep.
So okay.
Because it's like every 2 months.
Sense.
November, then December, January, February.
So, okay.
May.
So we should be in it.
Yeah.
Okay. That explains it. I saw that story and I said, why do you do that story right now? Oh, I see. I see why you do it. Okay.
Right.
By the way, while you're in here, I was going to later on in this segment transition and talk about our first winner in the Bill Finch's Plant Gardening for the Gulf Coast and our Yard of the Week contest. We had our first winner.
Yes, Gwen.
Yes, and just crushed it there on the votes. It's a good time to remind people we're in a new week of this. Your chance to win the much coveted FM Talk 106.5 Yard of the Week winner. And then on the back of that sign, mm-hmm. it's got Bill Finch's planting chart for the year, mm-hmm. which is really awesome. Something I use, what to be doing all the months of the year, how to be getting ready for the next thing you're planting and all that. So you can win one of those by doing what?
You go to our Facebook page and like our page, and then pinned to the top of the posts is the post that has a picture of the sign.
Mm-hmm.
And explains the contest. Just post your garden pictures there.
And it could be of an individual flower, your whole garden, a cool tree in your yard, something you're doing with your yard, anything like that.
Your kids.
Yeah.
Just like with the fishing contest.
Yes.
You know, when kids were in the picture, they
usually
won.
Yes.
And that's Gwen had a baby and some huge, I'm not sure what they were. They look like cabbage or turnips or something.
Right, in a cabbage patch.
Sure. Yeah. Yes, exactly. So that was very cute and it was very popular, very fast.
So what you do is you put that picture up like Leanna's saying, and mm-hmm. then you invite all your friends and family and everything to like the picture. And that's how we don't pick the winner each week. Right. Y'all pick the winner each week. So you enter your picture on the Facebook page. Then you get all your friends to like it. And whoever gets the most number of likes, you win. And then we shake the Etch-A-Sketch. And then another week starts and you get a chance to do it again and again and again.
Exactly.
And get the announcement with Bill on Sunday mornings.
And people are really vying for these signs. They really
are cool.
Need them. We're going into spring.
Yes.
And they want to know how to get ready to plant their gardens.
What I love about that is that wheel that's on the sign tells you what you should be doing, like right now, what you're planting, but what you're getting ready to do.
Exactly.
Or as I put in my, what we're fixing to do next.
Yes.
So, y'all check it out. It's on Facebook, facebook.com/FM Talk 106.5. Once again, put your picture up and then get everybody to come like your picture and then you win.
Yay.
There you go. All right. Very good. Check that out. And that is the boss. That is the admiral of all things Facebook, Leanna, as she's joining me in studio and also helping me understand why maybe this story popped up on the news feed today. All right. Coming up on today's show, hour number two, Alabama State Rep Chip Brown's going to join us. He was on 2 weeks ago, and we talked about a couple bills that he was working on and moving through the process out of committee in front of the House. We're going to see where those stand. I like that safe homes for Alabama, what could mean some extra funding to get your roof redone or your house reinforced. We'll talk about that and a whole lot more with him in hour number two. When we come back, my buddy Cameron Smith from AL.com and the Triptych Foundation. Lots to talk about here as we move on with Midday Mobile. It's Thursday style. Sure glad you're here. Be right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. On the way, Cameron Smith is going to join me with AL.com and the Triptych Foundation. This segment of the show brought to you by Omaha Steaks. Ever wonder what makes Omaha Steaks so darn good? Well, y'all, it's the aging process. Omaha Steaks are aged at least 21 days, and that's where the magic happens. I also want to talk about some of the other magic here, just everyday magic, and that is the way Omaha Steaks are delivered, how fresh and using the dry ice and the coolers they send it in, but also how they're packaged. Because if you have a situation where, you know, the family, four of y'all are home in one night, two are home the other night, one's home the other night, with the individual packaging, like on the burgers and chicken, I'll tell you more about how to get that in a second, you can break out just what you need for that night and not have to thaw out a whole bunch of, you know, of Omaha Steaks that you may not be eating that night. It is really a big deal in our house. Helps us a lot. Listen, you can try their mouthwatering steaks right now in the Butcher's Bestsellers package at omahasteaks.com. Enter my first name, Sean, S-E, A-N into the search bar and save over 50% and secure exclusive pricing. Included in this package, four of their iconic fork tender butcher cut filet mignon, four ultra juicy burgers, individually packaged, four savory pork chops, four kielbasa sausages, four rich and decadent caramel apple tartlets, and so much more. Now, in addition to getting more than 50% off, you also get four more chicken breasts and four more of the delicious burgers for free. Now, do this. Go to omahasteaks.com, type in Sean in the search bar, and get the special offer and order the Butcher's Bestseller Pack today. Save over 50%, plus get the four free chicken breasts and four burgers. It's omahasteaks.com. The keyword in that search bar is my first name, Sean, S-E-A-N, and I know you're going to love the meat and the packaging. They don't ever talk about the packaging. Is great stuff as well. All right, I want y'all to say hello to my buddy Cameron Smith from AL.com and the Triptych Foundation, checking in to talk about a whole bunch. Hey, Cameron. Oh, well, there we go. I have to push that button. Hey, Cameron.
Hey, Sean.
All right, I'll get the right button pushed here. All right, so a lot to do. First of all, I want to get a reaction to anybody that is conservative, anybody that works in media. I've given my reaction yesterday and today on the passing of Rush Limbaugh.
Oh, this is why we're talking right now, is without Rush Limbaugh, we don't have this conversation because talk radio is really not a thing. And so I understand Rush Limbaugh was certainly not everybody's cup of tea, but you just can't deny the impact that he had on particularly getting conservative voices in media that at the time he entered the fray was so heavily dominated by the left that, you know, it wasn't even really a thing for conservatives to have a media voice. And so that's a really, really big deal, and he'll be remembered for that.
You know, and I said this yesterday, and I've said it in a couple interviews I've done. It's the entertainment value. I think that's what's lost to a lot of people, the entertainment value that Limbaugh came in. Because there were, listen, conservative thought was out there, and disc jockeys were out there, but they were not the same. There wasn't a person, there were stuffed shirts talking about conservative ideals, and then there were wacky disc jockeys making jokes and, playing records out there. But you had somebody that understood entertainment, like Limbaugh did, and then put that with conservative thought. I think it made it more available to more people, literally and figuratively.
Yeah, it's what I would call connective conservatism. It's great, and I've lived in both worlds, right? The policy world, it's really important that you know the details, you get into the weeds, but most people don't have time for that. They don't have the ability to go read a bunch of white papers and research and data. And so having somebody, and you're a good example of this, that can say, hey, I've done a little homework. I can talk to you about this in a way that's engaging for you, that's interesting, that's entertaining, sometimes funny. That is a really big deal, and Rush Limbaugh did a lot for that format.
All right, and I think you're right on, and I use that as a segue into your latest opinion piece over at AL.com. Alabama Republicans should demand more than a gag campaign, and which acronym here we'll find out more, in the U.S. Senate race. So let's talk about that. First of all, what is a gag? What's that an acronym for?
Everybody in Alabama, the South, the country has heard of gag campaigns. They just don't know it. It's God, abortion, and guns. And that is the baseline. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm saying it's the baseline that if you're a Republican and you don't jump over that hurdle of saying, my faith is really important to me, I'm pro-life, and I'm pro-Second Amendment, then it's really hard to run as a Republican. Unfortunately, and this was the thrust of my piece, we've got a lot of candidates who run gag campaigns, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
They don't say anything else about how they want to push back on progressive priorities. They don't say how they want to govern, how they're planning to build coalitions. They don't talk about their track record. They just talk about those three things on a loop, scream about socialism, scream about the fake news media, and basically keep people distracted. My point is, hey, this Senate seat coming up in Alabama with the Shelby retirement is important. And we need, candidates to explain to the people of Alabama why they can be the kind of person that can make a big difference. And folks say, well, we don't like Mitch McConnell. Well, who are you going to send to the Senate that might be able to replace him?
It's Cameron, think about back last year, you and I were talking, there was a possible debate coming up that I was going to be part of as a moderator here. And I think I said to you, I said, here's what I'd like to do in opening commentary is run through, God, abortion, guns, and that they love America, and get everybody to nod and agree and say, okay, now that's the end of that. We all agree that y'all, are pro-Second Amendment, y'all are pro-life, and you believe in a Judeo-Christian ethic of this country. Okay. We're not talking about that anymore. Now let's build off of that. You and I talked about that. I think you said something like, well, that won't leave a lot to talk about for some of the candidates. I mean, that's the problem. I want to get that out of the way and say, good, we'll check that off, check the list. Now tell me how you're going to be better at this job than the next person.
Yeah. And this is what I obviously with my piece, I brought up Mo Brooks because Congressman Brooks has set himself up for a Senate run. This isn't new. He wanted to run previously. He finished in the special election in 2017 behind Luther Strange and Roy Moore. And he said, well, I got to improve my name ID. I got to do these things to set up a Senate run in the future. He did that with his, stuff related to the election and saying we needed to not certify the Electoral College. Got a lot of name ID and publicity for that. And he's planning to run, but it feels just like every other campaign we've seen. And Congressman Brooks is smart. He is capable of answering some of these questions, but I think he has to. And the notion that candidates just get away with saying, I don't like socialism and it's really bad. Well, okay. But I mean, this is a United States Senate seat we're talking about. We need people there that can build coalitions, can deal with process and procedure, the business of governing. And so if you're somebody that doesn't have time for that and you want to just deliver stump speeches, you're not going to be very effective in the Senate. And in a safe seat like the one from Alabama, that person that goes to the Senate needs to be the kind of person. I'm not saying that Mitch McConnell doesn't need to be replaced. I'm saying if you send somebody there that's a lot of sound and a lot of noise and not a lot of substance, Mitch McConnell is not going to be replaced. He'll be perfectly happy right where he is.
You know, you talk about Congressman Brooks. So one of the things that that happened, the reason I got to know Congressman Brooks so well when he comes on the show, was for years he would call in and talk about my favorite. He'd talk fiscal policy, right? And he was one of the few that I could talk about these things with that were really talking about, well, here's an example, and here's if you did this and you reduce spending here. I mean, he had real ideas on it. So to know that if he runs for Senate and doesn't bring that part of the personality out, I think we the people lose to not hear that. I mean, that needs to be part of the discussion. And also this idea that, you know, the senators work for Alabama. They don't, I mean, yes, they're Republicans or Democrats, but they work for Alabama, not for the party.
Right. And I think Congressman Brooks has long been great on fiscal issues and saying, hey, hear me out here. Here's the fundamentals in terms of legislative effectiveness. He's had one post office naming. That's the only thing that's become law that he sponsored. And in fact, in his decade-long career, only had one other piece of legislation make it even through the House of Representatives. And that's not the only measure, but it's a good indicator of effectiveness. And what does Mitch McConnell do so well? It's, well, he brings a lot of different kinds of senators with different political realities to the table. You don't have to like his agenda or like the way he does it, but if you want to beat him, you got to beat him at his own game, which is legislating. It's dealing with regulation. It's moving judicial nominees. That's what Mitch McConnell does. And frankly, Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, the left, they deal in legislation and regulation. That's mm-hmm. what they want to move. And so conservatives have to push back on that battlefield rather than on the stump and not doing a whole lot.
Yeah, but by the nature of that, this opens up so many questions, Cameron. By the nature of that, if the Democrats, their idea is legislation and regulation, that's how they make their chops, wouldn't it be standing up against those additional legislative pieces and bills and regulations that are not conservative? Wouldn't that be the chop for a conservative versus bringing their own legislation? Or maybe not. I don't know. How do you see it?
So I hear that a lot, and that's actually a really dangerous way to look at it. And I mean dangerous for a reason. Imagine you're in a NASCAR race, and you're trying to race. You're trying to beat the other contestants, right? They have gas and a brake. You only have brake. Mm-hmm. Well, guess who's going to win that race every time? The one with gas and a brake. Because when we hear making laws or engaging regulations, we hear more government. And that's not accurate, because you can have actual regulations that roll back harmful regulations. You can have laws that reclaim constitutional authority and shrink government. That's the mechanism to do it. But just because you pass a law or enact a regulation doesn't mean you're expanding government. In fact, that's a tremendous tool to bring it back.
All right, we're coming right back. More with Cameron Smith. AL.com and the Triptych Foundation talk more about his latest opinion piece. Also, yes, we will revisit the well that's gaming in Alabama. Talk about that when we come back.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 12:35, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. By the way, on the Twitter feed, and I think Leanna may have gotten it up on Facebook as well, a big thank you to, first of all, to the crew at Robertsdale Power Equipment, Dwight and Bonnie and Matt, the whole crew out there for having us out yesterday, and Mike Thrower with Husqvarna. Let me run some chainsaw. The electric that was new, just a side note, and we're getting right back to the talk with my buddy Cameron, but he's probably interested too. The new electric chainsaws or something. I got to run one yesterday. Impressed. You can see a little quick video of that up on the Twitter feed. All right, continue our conversation with Cameron Smith from AL.com and the Triptych Foundation. And talking about gag campaigns? And if somebody's just joining us again, can we reset this? Cameron, what's gag?
Gag is gun, abortions, and God. Or you can even reverse it and have God, abortion, guns. I mean, those are the topics that all Republican campaigns have to hit. The problem is that's just been the low and high watermark. You get over the hurdle, folks don't have to explain much else. And my argument is we need politicians to start explaining a little bit more, other than to say, you know, we don't like the media and we don't like socialism, because I think we should just stipulate that and move on to, okay, now how are you going to combat socialism? That's a good thing to talk about.
Yeah. And by the way, too, that the gag politics, I mean, makes it way into state politics. I mean, public service commission races have, you know, a discussion of that, and I often roll my eyes about it. Matt says on the text line, love Cameron's take on this. He calls it like it is. You're not going to have an effective senator with a Mo Brooks and Tuberville at the same time. You got to have someone with a little more substance to them. People have got to take off their sensationalism hats and look more into the candidates in detail versus just God's gun and no new taxes.
Absolutely. And I mean, people don't realize what benefit they had in Alabama of having Richard Shelby and Jeff Sessions, because you had an appropriator and a budget hawk at the same time. Mm-hmm. You had a healthy tension. You had two senators that kind of hit every aspect of what conservatives were interested in Alabama. And yeah, Shelby took a lot of the heat for, you know, bringing home the bacon, and people said, well, that's not conservative. And Sessions took a lot of heat for being a hardliner on immigration and other things like that. But overall, it was a really effective representation of the state. And I think it's really important to remember. And I hear a lot of people, and they're right. Mitch McConnell's power politics is not for everybody. And there's a reason Mitch McConnell is not particularly popular in a lot of even the red states. But my point is he knows how to do politics. He knows how to build coalitions, advance priorities, advance judicial nominees. And, you know, in a safe Republican seat, you need to put somebody up who can replace Mitch McConnell, who can do those kind of things in a way that supports conservative ideas. And that's what voters need to be expecting.
Okay. But then I'm going to play this side of it. Somebody can go in and talk about these methodologies and all the things they're going to do when they go up there and how they're going to build coalitions, when their opponent in the race is going to be sticking to the gag and sticking to it, repeating, repeating, repeating. I'm going to argue that they will win with the tighter message, that people don't have enough time in the day to go deeper. They just know this person's for these three things that they think are important.
Yeah, and I'm not saying get your message confused and diluted or get people in the weeds. Even as much of a policy nerd as I am, I know that you don't win campaigns on public policy. You win it on personality. You win it on vision and big ticket stuff. So I'm not saying don't run the gag campaign. Those issues are the minimum bar. But instead of, if you have one candidate that just runs a gag campaign and you have somebody that runs a gag campaign and says, you know what? Here's how I'm going to accomplish the things I'm talking about. Here's how I'm going to support life. Here's how I'm going to support religious liberty. And oh, by the way, we're going to push back on Chuck Schumer. And here's the plan. Here's how it shows something more. So I'm not saying do that instead of the gag campaign. I think you have to do it along with it.
No, and I'm playing devil's advocate to some degree, because what you've lined out is what I've asked for years in races here. I want to go, like I said, when that discussion of the debate and moderating came up, I said I wanted to go through those gags and then say, okay, everybody agrees. Now tell me what else. What are you going to, why are you better at enacting these policies than the person to your, you know, standing next to you or the other people standing next to you? I'm interested. I mean, it's a job interview.
When it can happen, when you have a number of good candidates in the field who are all conservative, who are all saying the gag campaign, you have to set yourself apart. And I'll use the Tuberville campaign as an example. Well, what happened there was Tuberville recognized that Sessions was his main competition. And you know what? Trump couldn't stand Sessions at that point. And so once Trump started doing the damage work for Tuberville. Tuberville didn't have to really explain anything. He didn't have to really talk about his vision, and he could just coast to victory in the primary, and he knew that he was going to throttle Doug Jones. And I think that's the challenge in a red state like Alabama, is to have a really competitive primary with multiple candidates, and then those threshold issues that form the baseline aren't enough to get you over the top. And so you have to talk about the how, why you're effective. And I think it'll be interesting to see. I'm almost positive Brooks is in. You've got John Merrill, Katie Britt. There's a couple that are kind of floating around. But if you have a healthy field of folks that are actually talking, then I think that could really make a difference.
Okay, as you lay out that field, too, there's certain lanes, even though I hate to do it, but, I mean, there are certain lanes that develop when it comes to finding money, right? You get this lane within a primary, Republican primary. Bo Brooks and Blanchard, are they in the same lane? Do they have to fight it out to get the money there, being like the Trump lane?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting to see how that works, because Brooks was a virulent opponent of Trump when he first ran.
Mm-hmm.
He was a Cruz guy and said some stuff that was pretty overt. And then here recently has said, hey, I'm with Trump, and he's done it on this election integrity front. It'll be interesting to see how that works. I think he's probably the eyes on favorite to get the Trump endorsement. Blanchard seems interesting, but it's hard to see how, you know, she would set herself apart and say, hey, is it Trumpier than Brooks, or, you know,
right,
what that angle is. But they both seem in that gag campaign, let me ride Donald Trump's coattails type campaign setup right now.
But where does it, okay, that's for votes, the Kenneth Moss Trumpy we talked about before, but what about money? Right. That's the fuel that drives this whole thing. So in this point where we've had one announcement of somebody in, but we have all these possibles that we're talking about, they're now trying to figure out whatever they call feasibility studies, which to me means, can they raise the money? Right. So what do the money players say when they're looking at that? How are they making this decision? Are they asking the questions you're asking, like, OK, here's the gag part, but what are you going to do? How are you going to implement? How is that the election for dollars? How is that being done?
Well, I'd like to say that this was so ideologically driven and people were kicking all the they want to know that they're backing a candidate that can win.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the bottom line, is they don't want to throw good money after bad. They don't want to, talk to somebody and realize, ugh, this one, their chances aren't great. And so that naturally dries up the field pretty fast, is once somebody gets in and shows that they can raise money, then you got to say, can I raise at least as much as they can? So far, I don't see anybody that's clearing the field. I don't see anybody that's going to jump in that race right now that their capacity and their network and their coalition building is so much greater than everybody else that field would kind of bow out. There's a reason people bow out for incumbents in most cases, is because they have those advantages built in. While Congressman Brooks is popular in his district, the 2017 race said, what is his statewide appeal, ability to really marshal resources? I don't think even if he jumps in, that'll scare most folks. What will kind of get people's attention is if he jumps in, has the Trump endorsement, and he's seen as kind of the Trump candidate. Everybody else in the field who was going to kind of run that gag campaign plus Trump now is playing second fiddle to whoever gets a Trump endorsement.
Let's talk about when it comes to money here. Could Shelby transfer? Because we know the war chest has been huge. I don't think even the last time he even went out and looked for more money. The war chest, I forget the latest numbers on it, but it was big. Could he transfer that to her, or how is that done legally? What could he do with that money?
Yeah, absolutely. A campaign can do a lot of different things. The McCain-Feingold campaign finance law basically stops you from putting it in your pocket. That used to be an option for retiring politicians, is they could just walk away
cha-ching
with it. It's no longer the case. But you can give it to a nonprofit. You can do all kinds of different things in terms of how you distribute those funds to other candidates. The challenge is, most of that's public, right? And so if it appeared like Shelby was picking any candidate, and obviously Katie was his former chief of staff, Alabamians, and frankly, everybody hates feeling like someone's picking a candidate on their behalf. And so I think Katie, if she decides to really push it, is got to be careful with how she handles that, because obviously Shelby has an affinity for her. But does that help her in terms of reaching folks across Alabama? It certainly gives her resources. I don't think people want to be told this is the anointed candidate.
Okay, one last question on this, and then we're going to shift gears here after the break and talk about gaming. But Tim says, could Jeff Sessions be eligible to run for Shelby's seat?
Yeah, I mean, Sessions, if he decided to jump back in and wanted to run, here's the problem. And I work for Jeff Sessions and think he's fantastic. But we got to look for the future. I mean, the Republican Party around the country has to start looking for the future. And one of the advantages you see in a candidate like Katie is youth and energy. And I think it's really, really important not to discount that as you're filling out a candidate field in Alabama, if it's here's recycled folks, here's older folks, there's some benefit to age and wisdom, but there's also a real benefit to saying, how are we going to contend for the future and trying to get those voices?
There you go. Coming right back. More with Cameron Smith, AL.com, and the Triptych Foundation. And grab some more of these texts here, too. And I want to talk some rambling gambling with Cameron when we return.
Listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Hey, by the way, speaking of buyers and buyers, so Rachel Byers was on earlier in the week with me talking about some of these changes here, things you need to be on the lookout for, whether you're a small business, taxes, your individual taxes. You can go back and check that podcast out with the other 54 hours a week of live local programming by going through fmtalk1065.com. You can pick your a la carte, kind of like buffet style, y'all. You can pick your podcast, or better yet, subscribe at iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Spotify, Deezer. I'm missing one or 20 of the other. Pretty much, if there's a podcast platform out there, we're on it. So make sure you sign up and have those shows delivered to your phone right there and listen when you can. All right, continue our conversation with my friend Cameron Smith, AL.com, and the Triptych Foundation. And I want to shift gears here away from the Senate race and more to this race for gaming in Alabama. I mean, I do detect the fact that there's a little grin that took 20 years of like molasses in February, like movement. And then all of a sudden it seems like, oh, this is on a fast track. Now we got to get this done.
Yeah. I mean, I want to congratulate Alabama on having a really, really creepy gambling bill. Like, great work, guys.
But it's creepy. I mean, it's creepy.
Yeah, I mean, this is creepy.
I love it.
It is literally the same problem as you have with nursing homes in Alabama.
Explain that.
You know, it is, okay, so certificate of need basically blocks lots of things from happening. It's a government way to keep competition out of the marketplace, because people say, well, you can only have so much of industry X before it's not profitable, so we don't want to have excess capacity. Look, this is the worst argument ever for conservatives. Conservatives believe that markets work to allocate supply and demand. If you want gambling, guess what? You open it up and say, hey, casino builder. Casinos aren't cheap. If you want to build a casino, you better know that you're going to be the competitive choice. You're going to be the one that creates demand and has cool opportunities and venues for consumers, because they'll reward you with their dollars.
Mm-hmm.
What this bill does is kind of like the CON. It says you can have these casinos, but if you want another casino somewhere, no, you can't have that. This is government nanny state type stuff, and it's garbage. And I like Del Marsh. I've known him for years, and he is a smart politician who can bring people together. This just is not a good bill if you're a conservative. If you look at this and say, well, where's the competition? Where are the free market principles? Where's the idea that we don't pick winners and losers? it's just not there. And then to say, well, if you want any gaming, this is all you get.
That's what I'm hearing.
That's like Soviet-style politics. I mean, that's insane.
That's what I'm hearing. The people whisper in my voice, hey, you're going to push this too far and you're going to get nothing. Well, you got to be... To discuss this, I don't really care. I care about the liberty of people who want to do this, being able to do it. I don't gamble, so it's like I have no motivation. But I don't care if we have gambling. If people want to vote on it, great. We can talk about all that. But yes, you're being pushed to, like, we got to close this now. That worries me. When there's pressure, whether you're buying a bicycle or signing a deal for gaming in the state of Alabama, somebody says, I got to have a decision right now. Right now. Tell me right now. This is the only way to do it. I walk away, man. I walk away from those situations because there's a reason the pressure is being applied there. And the fact that this is the only choice that we would have, why don't we have an idea like, you know, why don't we separate them? Why don't we vote on different parts of it? Why don't we say, hey, this first wave is going to legalize sports betting or whatever it is to anybody who can meet these basic minimums? You know, they have to bond out the money, they have to pay the license fee, and the state collects 20% from the, and then they do it. Then you go, okay, then we bring in the lottery, then we bring in the casinos. None of that's being discussed. It's either this or the highway.
Yeah, I mean, this is like high-pressure used car sales tactics with apologies to used car salesmen. I mean, this is what people do in politics. This isn't my first rodeo. I've been around this stuff forever. I've been writing about and talking about gaming in Alabama for a long time. I think what has changed over time is that people in Alabama and I think most conservative types say, you know, the moral argument of absolute prohibitions on all gaming just isn't really as persuasive as it used to be. But this isn't about that. This is about, hey, if you're going to have something, you need to have something that looks like competition. You need to have reasons to benefit consumers rather than saying, here is your dispensation of government. I hope you like it. I don't like the pressure tactics. It's a very Soviet model, like, here is your gaming. You will like it. And I think people in Alabama should be like, you know, you work for us, right? And when you don't give us the options we want, we can find someone else who will. And, you know, that's the kind of hardball that folks need to take on this because, you know, I'm not a big gamer type guy myself, but if I were, I would want competition.
Yes.
So that those casinos, those gambling outlets are the nicest, cleanest, most entertaining things that are possibly out there versus, hey, here's a weird place to put this thing in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
It's just strange.
And you would think if they want a business model to get the casual casino person in there, right? Not the person who does this just for the gambling. You do that. And that was my frustration, whether you have a monopoly, a duopoly, a triopoly, whatever it's going to be. The motivation, like you said, to improve the facility is not there. I mean, what that is a monopoly or utility is proactive. They're not. They're only reactive. I mean, we have to have like a PSC to monitor a utility because there's not a market. There's not market forces to do it. And we're signing up. We are knowingly signing up to do that in the state, a place that, like you said, I want the, you know, here's this casino over here. They got one dolphin in their show. The other one, they've got five dolphins jumping through hoops, and they've got the hologram Siegfried and Roy, and they're bringing back Duran, whatever it is to get the people in there, the casual people to gamble. That's the market. That makes the facilities better, cleaner, pay out better, smoke-free, whatever it is. That's motivated by competition, and we are signing up right now to not do that.
Yeah, and if you want a government control model, look no further than Alabama Power. And they make their money based on return on equity. Alabama Power does fine, but they are basically a monopoly, right? And so the government regulates it. Now, if the casinos want to have that deal and they want to have, you know, be capped, we'll just be generous and say 10% profit margins. And the rest goes to the state of Alabama, then, okay, that's a decent argument. You could pay for a heck of a lot more because the state's going to make more money. But none of those facilities want that. And I don't blame them for not wanting competition. I understand why they don't. But that's not the the consumer should not have to pay for that. It should be the casinos.
I'm not blaming the players in this. I've said this from the beginning, from the Legacy Dog Track folks to the Porch Bandit Creek Indians. I get where I'd be doing the same thing if I was them. I would be doing the same thing because that's their job, to get the best deal for their entity. But the legislature doesn't have to capitulate to that, and they are.
Yeah, and this is definitely mailing it in. And I'm a firm believer that with respect to the Porch Creeks, I would tell them, hey, we're going to allow Class 3 gaming in Alabama. What you do on your lands is totally up to you. Go for it. Build awesome casinos, and we'll leave you alone. We allow Class 3. You can do Class 3. And the notion that, you know, we have to somehow work a deal with them, I think letting the Porch Creeks do what they do and do it well, it should be great, but the idea that we're going to try to find an arrangement where we're going to limit competition, that's not the deal. And I know why everybody wants it. Follow the money, people.
Yeah.
I mean, these things are highly profitable. And we're not even talking about the state-run lottery, which I've opposed for everywhere in the United States for a generation because I think it's totally wrong to have the government running something that it depends on people losing and being economically harmed. Government's supposed to look out for people. It's not supposed to knowingly harm them.
Yeah. So, I mean, I would like them not in the – I'm like you. I would like private entities to do lottery. In addition, I would also add that if it is okay for states – and we got like 40 seconds left – but if states can do lotteries, then they should run casinos as well. All right. Tell folks where they can find you online.
Find me at dcameronsmith or al.com/opinion and come to triptychfoundation.org. Yeah. Got a new website up.
Yeah, okay, and your elevator, your quick 10-second Triptych Foundation, what do y'all do?
We're just trying to make a difference and be a little crazier, or a little less crazier, man.
That's it. And that bar is not set very high, so you're going to be all right. Thank you,
Cameron.
Yeah,
well, I mean, you said 10 seconds, so that's what we got.
There you go. All right, we'll talk about it next week. Thank you, man.
Hey, and if Dale Marsh and the gambling folks get to you, you can always come up here, man.
Okay, I'm going to come out. By the way, when you go look at the social media for my friend Cameron, go look at him sledding the other day. He should know. He's old enough to know better, but young enough to still try, which is pretty cool. All right, coming right back, we'll ask some of these same questions. Representative Chip Brown joins us. We'll talk about this with him, some bills he's moving on right now when they get back in Montgomery as well. It's all straight ahead, hour number two of Midday Mobile.